Startups grow in unpredictable ways, but your infrastructure shouldn't. Deel scales with you from employee one to employee 1,000. Deel's real-time payroll engine cuts weeks-long cycles down to minutes. And their global experts keep you compliant as you expand. Plus, startups can tap into perks like up to $25,000 in Deel credits and support programs designed specifically for high-growth teams. Deel is the fastest way to hire, manage, pay, and equip anyone, anywhere. Deel, your forever people platform. Visit deel.com/MOS to learn more and book a demo.
On Masters of Scale, we talk a lot about inflection points, those moments when a technology stops being optional and starts being fundamental. AI presents one of those moments, and behind every breakthrough, whether it's medical research or education or even cinematic visual effects, there's infrastructure most people never see. As the essential cloud for AI, CoreWeave is building that foundation. It provides a purpose-built AI cloud designed specifically for pioneers at leading AI labs and enterprises, ready to power the biggest ideas and the boldest ambitions. Ready for anything, ready for AI. To learn more about how CoreWeave powers the world's best AI, go to coreweave.com/ready for anything.
What you might describe as speaking out, I just think is telling the truth about what's going on in the world right now. A healthy planet, thriving communities depends on a functioning democracy, and I have real concerns about the future of something I took for granted for the vast majority of my 53 years.
We get death threats and, you know, boycotts. You got to do the right thing, regardless of, you know, what lawyers and communication experts will say. Every challenge we face, we don't want it. But when that happens, it's an opportunity to make things better than ever before. And that excites me.
That's Patagonia CEO Ryan Gellert and Chobani CEO Hamdi Yulukaya, recorded live at the Masters of Scale Summit in San Francisco on October 8th. In this special episode, Ryan and Hamdi talk about the intersection of values and commerce, moderated deftly by New York Times reporter and author David Gellis. The two CEOs share their different strategies for dealing with an activist White House, the pressure for what David calls anticipatory compliance, and how they grow their businesses while also prioritizing causes like environmental conservation and immigration. Along the way, there are personal stories, advice, and yes, even a few F-bombs. So let's get to it. I'm Bob Safian, and this is Rapid Response.
Patagonia and Chobani are two companies that have long been defined by their purpose as much as their products. But both of your companies are showing up in very different ways at a moment when it can be hard or even dangerous to say what you really think. So we're going to get into all that and more. And I want to start with you, Hamdi. Chobani, you've always cared about more than just profits. For almost 20 years now, the company has been doing this work and been committed to more than just making great dairy products and all the other expansions you've done, but to taking care of refugees, immigrants, farmers. And at a moment when many companies are running away from anything that has a whiff of politics, you're looking for common ground, including with this administration, at a very divisive time. You've worked with the White House, you've co-authored an op-ed with Ivanka Trump, you're working on initiatives there. Take us inside this moment. How do you think about staying true to your values at a moment when the country can seem so divided?
Yeah, David. You know, starting from Turkey and in the hills of eastern part of Turkey as nomad family to making myself to this country and age of 22 and finding myself in upstate New York, you know, working on a farm. I have gone on this long journey.
Yeah.
And where I come and where I end up, into this old yogurt factory was shut down and closed and left.
Yep.
And finding that similarity between where I come from in the mountains of Kurdish mountains of Turkey, to this, you know, upstate valley where the small town and seeing the people and communities left behind by the businesses and the people in power and the ordinary people suffering. Yet, we are thousands of miles away from each location that where I grew up and where I live. So when you look at from that perspective, you cannot react, you know, daily politics or 4 years of politics. There are timeless truths and there are timeless challenges that we face as humanity. And in there, I grew up as someone who hate business, literally, and I hate the rich. And I the reason I left the country because I got into trouble because I was kind of borderline, you know, criminal, politically. And I end up being in jail for days and lucky to get out and find myself here. And we don't want to get into that trouble, that journey right now.
I think
that,
we do. I think story. We just don't have enough time.
We just don't have enough time. I found a dimension of the business that is so powerful. And I've been into NGOs, I've been into political activities, I've been into all kinds of stuff. And seeing that old factory close down, and I say, if I can bring this back, if I can fix it with the way that not go against the kid that grow up and still make it work, and there could be some solution here. So then I come back to this, is like, I cannot follow every other playbook, I have to follow my instincts, my way of doing things, and I've said, and I had no other choices anyway. So in that, David, I found that if you go employee first, if you go community first, if you create an environment where everybody is welcome, if you embody and realize what makes this land so special that everybody wants to come and make something out of it, and if you can look from a lens of not the city activist and country conservative eyes, but true united human dimensions, then you find them a lot more similarities than differences. Mm. And if we can look on that perspective of similarities, understand that there are some differences, but respectfully disagree. I think that's what I try to practice, and that's what the tribal knowledge I have.
That's beautiful, and I think we could all use a lot more of that in this country this day.
Yeah.
Ryan, Patagonia is a very different sort of company. This company has been meddling in politics, sometimes quite loudly, for more than 50 years now.
Meddling is a strong word.
Meddling, that's a gentle word.
Oh, okay.
Yvonne Chouinard has been donating to grassroots environmental activist campaigns for more than 50 years. In 2017, Patagonia sued President Trump and his cabinet. That's meddling.
Yeah.
And you still, even at a moment when most CEOs are afraid to say anything about this administration, you're still out there raising the alarm almost every single week, it seems. When your business is selling clothes, why do you spend so much time talking about politics and policy?
Yeah, it's, first of all, it's super interesting being on the stage with you, Hamdi, and with you, David. You know, I think you made reference to it. You wrote a book that's just come out in the last month about our founder and our 52-year history. You and I have gotten to know each other quite well over recent years. And I think there's a lot that we have spiritually in common as companies. And then I think to the nature of your question, to each of us, there's a lot that's actually quite different in how we navigate that.
Yeah.
I think for us to now answer your question, we are focused on protecting the natural world, period. That's why we exist. It's not about making money. It's not about being the biggest player in outdoor apparel and equipment. It's about protecting the natural world. And so that's what we do. And we exist in a world right now here in America where the threats are absolutely unprecedented. And I think that, you know, what you might describe as speaking out, I just think is telling the truth about what's going on in the world right now.
You said no F word before.
Oh, yeah, that's right. But we also said no baseball caps, just to be clear. There was a whole long list of things we weren't supposed to do.
It's the end of the day. We'll get to all of them here.
Okay. So, you know, climate's at risk.
Yeah.
pollution and polluters, the regulations are coming off, and conservation, particularly public lands here in America. I mean, it is one goddamn threat after another every single day. And so what are we speaking up on? Those things that matter, same things we've spoken up on for 52 years.
As the CEO of a company and as an individual, do you ever worry about the fact that this is a moment and an administration that has shown a willingness to be retributive?
Yeah, of course.
And how do you navigate that? Is there any, I mean, the word is anticipatory compliance. Are you holding back at all?
I think we have to be very strategic. I think we have to be very considered. I think what we talk a lot about is where do we have authenticity to offer an opinion on something, and where can we be truly additive? If it's performative and we're just offering an opinion to offer an opinion, that's not a space we're going to play in right now. I don't think the times benefit from that. I think where we can be truly authentic are two places. One is we're a business, and so we can speak from the business sector, and the other is on environmental and climate issues. We've got a 52-year history. We work our asses off to minimize our footprint. As you made reference to, we've supported grassroots activism for 40 years and counting. And so that's who we are, what we do, and I think we've earned the right to offer opinions on that.
Okay. You get a sense of the different approaches to really a very similar and consequential set of issues. We're going to talk about more than politics, I promise, but I do want to come back to this issue of, Hamdi, how you navigate a moment like this, and when you decide even to work with Ivanka Trump, even when you decide to work with the White House, it can seem like a no-win situation. You work with someone, you piss one side off. You say something, you piss the other side off. How do you think about engaging in these partnerships where you are trying to find common ground without alienating any of your consumer base?
Yeah, like what I do and what we do at Chobani is, you know, really we have the known instinct or reflex that we react regardless of what the world thinks and all that kind of stuff. Ivanka actually is not started now. I worked with her in Idaho after President Biden got into the White House, actually. And what we did is we made boxes of food from the farmers and we delivered to people in needs in communities at that time.
Yeah.
And later on, before even the election, she and her partner, they created this organization called Planet Harvest and says, do you realize that in California, 40% of all the fruits and vegetables are wasted and left in the land because they don't look good and there's no buyer. And I couldn't believe it. I am aware of these things. I didn't even realize. And I went to the land and I saw and partnered with her and her partner that had started quite knowledgeable that I didn't realize. Absolutely will do it. Absolutely will do it. I'll invest with it and I'll lead it and prove the concept. So to me, this, and when I said we're going to hire refugees, you know, during the first, was it, I don't know how many years ago, we got death threats and, you know, boycotts.
The first time I wrote about the company.
You wrote it, and New York Times, and we got death threats. The stuff is, we are all have to react as human beings who we are, and businesses are a combination of people. You got to do the right thing, regardless of, you know, what lawyers and communication experts will say. a lot of that.
On the advice of counsel stuff right now.
I'm getting texts from your communication expert right now.
I want to invite everybody to... We have some serious, serious issues that we have to bring everybody to the table to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, we really do.
Yeah.
I do see some egocentric reaction, just anger, because the other person... Okay, there are enormous amount of differences. I don't know. I was invited to White House because I was I'm announcing huge investment in Idaho and another one in Rome in New York and being part of Invest in America. Yeah. I don't have any working relationship with White House. But my view on immigration and refugees is the same.
Yeah.
I have an organization called Tent. I just came from Mexico. I'm meeting all those people that are encouraging people to hire refugees and train refugees. These are timeless truths.
Yeah.
You know, these are timeless truths. People are going to move, and we have to make a system that works for every single person. And we proved it in our factories, in our communities. And today, you will not have farm workers, or you will not have functioning farms and agriculture without immigration. Everybody knows that.
Amen.
Everybody.
There you go.
Timeless truths do make a difference, especially in times of disruption. So too does courage, which Hamdi and Ryan both demonstrate as day-to-day leaders and in their willingness to be blunt publicly about operating in such politicized times. So how much do they each prioritize growth versus values? And what most gives them hope for the future? We'll hear about that and more after the break. Stay with us.
Hey folks, Jeff Berman here. Exciting news. Applications are now open for the Masters of Scale Summit. It's happening October 20th through October 22nd in San Francisco, and it is a really special event. Please join our curated community of founders, innovators, and leaders shaping the future. Expect ideas that challenge your assumptions and connections that move your business and maybe even your life forward. It's an experience that can change literally everything. Apply now at mastersofscale.com/apply26. That's mastersofscale.com/apply26.
This is Zeb Farbman, co-founder and CEO of Lightrix, a technology company that creates AI-powered video models and tools.
Most of our research was along the border between computer graphics and image processing, and we thought that if we pair our expertise with this new platform, we will be able to create new tools and new creative experiences that no one did before.
But when the generative AI boom disrupted everything, Lightrix seized the moment with a new burst of innovation. They created LTX2, an open source AI model enabling its users to generate high quality video content, giving them full creative control from concept to delivery on one platform.
I think a lot of the values that we took from academia reflect how we are thinking about our models. We want them to be open. We want a collaborative environment. And we really, really care about efficiency. We always believe deep research is the key to unlocking a competitive advantage and building cool things. It's even more important during the age of AI.
Start creating today with LTX2 at ltx.studio.
AI breakthroughs are quickly reshaping every industry around the world. Healthcare, education, science, entertainment, and beyond. But true global scale only happens when the underlying infrastructure can maintain pace with the rapid speed of innovation. As the essential cloud for AI, CoreWeave is a purpose-built cloud made for the real demands of today's most complex AI models, bringing the pace, performance, and partnership leading pioneers need to continue pushing boundaries. Ready for anything? Ready for AI. To learn more about how CoreWeave powers the world's best AI, go to coreweave.com/readyforanything.
Before the break, Patagonia's Ryan Gellert and Chobani's Hamdi Ulukaya talked with David Gellis of the New York Times live at the Masters of Scale Summit about how they've expressed their values in the face of an historically activist Trump administration. Now, Ryan explains why Patagonia doesn't always equate business growth with impact, and Hamdi explains how independent ownership structure can enable freedom of action. They also each share personal stories of key decision points for them and their companies, and they share what most gives them hope for the future. Let's dive back in.
A lot of people in this audience are looking to grow and grow fast. Mm-hmm. I think, Ryan, it's an incredible point of distinction that Patagonia is a company that over the years has deliberately restrained its growth. You made reference to it earlier. You said we are not trying to be the biggest apparel company. And I think that mentality can just be like anathema to a lot of founders.
Yeah.
And I wonder, when you think about all the things that I've written about, stopping distribution in retail partners where you have ideological differences, not selling on Amazon, all these decisions, how do you keep a sense of forward momentum and keep your team motivated when you're sort of stepping on the brakes at the same time?
I think we're stepping on the brakes in that we're still growing. We're growing modestly in this environment, but we're still growing for the most part. And I think having a dynamic organization, one that has a reason for being and forward momentum, yeah. I think the whole concept of growth is quite a reductive definition of or the concept of revenue being the defining element of growth and momentum, I think, is a reductive idea. I think...
Say just a bit more of that.
Well, I would...
I mean, because I can feel it in the energy. People want to know more. Say
Let me say this. I am as big a proponent of growth as there is in this room. It's growth and impact that I think is most important for us. Okay. I think growth in revenue can allow for some of that. Yeah. And so I think it's some ways necessary evil. I think when we're taking it from competitors who we think might be making lesser product or think about business differently, I'm unapologetic about that. But we don't have our foot mashed on the accelerator trying to chase every distribution opportunity, partnership opportunity, collaborative opportunity, or entering new markets. This is not how we think about it.
That's a refreshing take at a moment when I think so many companies, you get the sense, are just mashing it on the gas. Hamdi, you've been able to grow extraordinarily well over almost 20 years now. I think 18 years since you sold your first cup of yogurt. Yep. I think publicly reported just shy of $3 billion in revenue recently. An amazing American success story. I wonder, though, as you've hit those inflection point moments, those years, I mean, even I think recently you had 17% growth in 1 year. When you're growing that fast, how do you work to maintain quality and make sure the product and the service and the integrity, not only of the products, but the company doesn't slip?
Yeah. I started in the wrong place. I should have started here. Where I started business is country, where the cows are, where the land are, and no bars and no restaurants, nothing. so you sleep in the factories. And my first 5 years, David, I never left the factory. And then when I built a factory in Idaho, I never left for, I don't know, 6 months, 7 months in the factory. So these are commitments. Like, you got to make those kind of commitments.
Yeah.
Unless you make those kind of commitments, things will go, especially in a high growth environment, will go down. It will go south really fast. Today, we grow 25% to 30%. We add $1 billion in sales almost every year. I have to build infrastructure. We make 100% every single product that we sell. And we have one single line. Anything that I would not, or we would not feed to our own children, we would not make it. So if it's if we can't,
you just bought beer. You just bought Angustin beer.
That's not part of Chobani. No.
well played.
You're just taking it from all sides.
Non-alcohol beer things we can do.
All right. this is breaking news. The category announcement.
So the food is a little different. Food is especially fresh food, that the type of food that we make. We said everyone deserves good food, right? I mean, we know what the challenges are. You have a lot of options in small formats and specialty stores and all that stuff. But how do you make products that can go all across the country, right? And that is one of the hardest things to crack.
Yeah.
It's almost impossible. Every small startups getting to a certain level will be part of large, big CPG. And they, you know what they do with it. You know, you never see to the next level. So we might be one of the few companies, if not the only one, in that space or grocery space that not only stayed independent, grew and took the number one position.
Yeah.
And when you are in that dimension, like meaning you kept what makes you so special, but you expanded and you grow, you maintain your independency, then it gets some kind of good position, what we are today. 18 years, by coming back to your question, 15 years of it, I am either in the factory or in the field.
Yep.
I mean, that's what it takes, that kind of commitment.
It's important to note, both of these companies, Chobani and Patagonia, real legacies of independent ownership, which I posit gives both of your organizations the freedom to really stay true to your values in a way that would be much more challenging with a bigger, more diverse set of stakeholders.
I'm happy to be with Ryan here in this stage with him and being mentioned with Patagonia. There are only few corporate examples. You wrote the book. Congratulations, by the way, the book that you just wrote about Patagonia. There is only few examples of this story. There is not such thing.
Yeah.
And Patagonia has passed every single test that there is in a corporate, and still maintains absolutely. And there are a lot of teachings for us. You know, we haven't gone that far. We followed the other path, which is every single employee of Chobani is a shareholder. of Chobani.
Isn't that interesting?
Including every single line workers, factory workers, refugees, immigrants, everybody. These are the stuff that is going to make a difference tomorrow.
Ryan, Hamdi was just talking about ownership mm-hmm. and the fact that he has included employees in ownership.
Yeah.
Patagonia made the absolute opposite choice. 3 years ago, Yvon Chouinard and his family gave away the company. We don't have time to get into the details, but you were a part of that process. And I'm curious, as a relatively new CEO at the time, when mm-hmm. he came to you and he said, I want you to help me give away the equity of this company and create a new situation by which all the profits that aren't reinvested in the company go out the door to charity. What was your response, and how did that change how you think about your role as a leader?
You said I was a relatively new CEO. I think it was the first time or second time I had seen Yvon and his family after moving over from Europe in this role. So I couldn't have been newer. It was in the depths of COVID.
Yeah.
They were not as specific as you just said. What they said is, we want to sort out the future ownership of this company and take it away.
Yeah.
And a week after them saying that, I went over to meet with the Chouinards again, and they said, how's that going? And I said, God, you got to be kidding me. I've ignored you the whole week intentionally. I can't believe you're asking me to do this right
serious.
Now in the middle of COVID. So we started putting a process together, and what we started to understand was, what are all the things you want to be true? What are the things you wouldn't accept? And we landed really on two central elements. One was ensure that Patagonia will continue to exist in the world, imbued with the values that we have created within it. And the other is cash flow the environment in much bigger ways right now. So that was the nature of the reorganization.
Hamdi, very briefly, you referenced earlier your deep commitment to refugees, your own experience as an immigrant. When you see what's happening on the streets of this country right now, how does that make you feel
about
this country that has given you so much, to which you have given so much?
And I invite everyone to, you know, focus on that line. This country is a very special country. It has given us, all of us, so much. And I'm lucky. I'm one of the lucky. And I find it's my responsibility to be part of whatever the future looks like and do my part right now. But I come back to this one particular picture. I walk into this town, I see this factory close after 75 years. 55 workers in this distance from everywhere, everybody. For them, that was the end of the world. The steam finally off. Their source of meal for their kitchen is gone. And I show up. The first thing I do, I hire four people from the 55 people. They don't believe this will ever come back to life. The largest company in the country has gone. And this guy who doesn't even speak the language and doesn't even have a car, he's going to do something about this? Four people, the first thing I said to them, we're going to paint the wall outside. One of the guy who retired from there, his name is Mike, I said, Hamdi, those walls outside hasn't been painted for the last 25 years. Mm. Tell me you have more ideas than that one. I said, I do, but we got to start with somewhere. The point I'm making is, 2 years after that, I launched the brand, Chobani. 4.5 years later, it was $1 billion sales. We have 1,000 people. That place was 100 times bigger and better than ever before. So if you ask those people, when the factory was closed, what was the worst thing ever happened here? They would say, that factory was closed. If you ask them today, what was the best thing ever happened to this town? They would say that factory was closed. The point I'm making is, every challenge we face, we don't want it. But when that happens, it's an opportunity to make things better than ever before. And that excites me.
Ryan, final question. You, on the one hand, referenced and you see every day the damage that is being done mm-hmm. to the natural world. It's something you care about deeply. It's something this organization has cared about deeply for decades now. At the same time, you're funding the frontline grassroots activists. You're funding conservation projects that are blocking detrimental projects that might impact pristine natural environments. When you take the whole picture in, mm-hmm. where are you on the state of this country and our ability to take care of our common home?
I think that a healthy planet, thriving communities, depends on a functioning democracy, and I have real concerns about the future of something I took for granted for the vast majority of my 53 years. So I'm really concerned. I think You know, on the positive end, what gives me hope? It's spending time in nature, and it's spending time increasingly with younger leaders who are not debating the existence of these issues, debating the science or the facts.
Yeah.
They're just pragmatically charging ahead. And so that's the thing that gives me hope in spite of it all.
Hamdi and Ryan, thank you very much.
You.
Many thanks to David Gelis for leading such a thoughtful conversation. Hamdi and Ryan are compelling figures because they run their business in unconventional ways and arguably outperform because of that. Holding fast to values doesn't need to be a road to divisiveness and distraction. It can be fuel for empowerment, engagement, when implemented with care, discipline, and a long-term perspective. We'll continue to share the freshest exchanges from the Masters of Scale Summit as rapid response episodes, including rapid-fire sessions on new branding buzzwords with Autodesk CMO Dara Treseder, and on today's myths around tariffs with Flexport CEO Ryan Peterson, plus a surprising pairing of the Commissioner of the National Women's Soccer League and the CEO of The Honest Company. You can catch up with videos from the Masters of Scale Summit on the Rapid Response YouTube channel. I'm Bob Safian. Thanks for listening.
While everyone was debating whether or not Bitcoin was an asset for their portfolio, CoinShares was quietly building the foundation to invest in it properly. CoinShares launched the world's first Bitcoin ETP back in 2015. Today, they manage nearly $6 billion and are profitable through multiple market cycles. CoinShares is publicly traded on NASDAQ Stockholm and announced in September it is seeking a U.S. listing. CoinShares is the one-stop shop for digital asset investment, passive ETFs, active strategies, and mining exposure. Every approach built to institutional standards. CoinShares. The adults have arrived. Learn more at coinshares.com.
Hey, folks, if you enjoyed our recent episode with my friend Matt Abrahams, the brilliant author and academic has his own podcast, Think Fast, Talk Smart. Twice a week, the Stanford lecturer sits down with experts to discuss their best advice to hone and develop your communication skills. Learn to stress less about public speaking, make more meaningful small talk, and much more. You'll always get science-backed strategies and actionable tips you can use right away. And Matt is just a fantastic guy. You're going to love having him in your ear. Listen to Think Fast, Talk Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt. My podcast, Search Engine, has a new two-part series for you. Of all the new technologies coming out of AI, the most transformative one might be driverless cars. They're already on the road in 10 American cities, and they're quickly coming to more. We tell the story of how we got here. The secret team at Google that spent 15 years building what might be the safest vehicle on the road. And we cover the fights brewing in blue cities, where unions and politicians are working to keep those cars off the streets. Listen to Search Engine wherever you get your podcasts.
Rapid Response is a Wait What original. I'm Bob Safian. Our executive producer is Eve Troe. Our producer is Alex Morris. Associate producer is Mashumaku Tonina. Mixing and mastering by Aaron Bastinelli. Our theme music is by Ryan Holiday. Our head of podcasts is Lital Malad. For more, visit rapidresponseshow.com.